I would say, you know, I don't think it'd be science fiction, but where a lot of this is headed towards is literally every function is going to change to a degree. How you do insights, how you summarize, how you write code. The one thing that's pretty obvious that's going to happen is scenario planning and creating many versions of outcomes is going to become easier and easier.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. Welcome back to AI and the Future of Work. Thanks again for making this one of the most downloaded podcasts about the future of work. If you enjoy what we do, please tell a friend, and we'll keep sharing great conversations like the one we have for today. I'm your host, Dan Turchin, CEO of PeopleRain, the AI platform for IT and HR employee service. We learn from AI thought leaders weekly on this show. And of course, the added bonus, you get one AI fun fact each week. Today's fun fact, Mark Gamine writes in The Atlantic about AI's spicy mayo problem, in which he argues censored chatbots are boring. He cites a ridiculous example of ChatGPT refusing to provide a recipe for spicy mayo because, in quotes, it is not appropriate to provide recipes or instructions that may cause harm to individuals. Spicy foods can be delicious, but they can also be dangerous if not prepared or consumed properly. We frequently discuss LLM guardrails and the need to protect users from hateful content and replies that can lead to unintended negative consequences. We usually are referring to topics like suicide, drug overdose, hate speech, or criminal acts. Is there such thing as guardrails being too strict to the point where LLMs are no longer useful? Or dare I say, fun. Elon Musk and the Grok team seem to agree, as do other experts. There's a growing backlash of users who want to decide how and when to modify or remove those barriers. It's a topic we'll continue to debate. For now, I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not AI does, in fact, have a spicy mayo problem. As always, we'll link to the full article in today's show notes. Now, shifting to this week's conversation. We've met amazing guests in and around the field of AI-first data management, including Bar Moses from Monte Carlo, Peter Fishman from Mozart Data, and Derek Steer, formerly from Mode. Today, we'll spend time with the product leader at one of the most successful data analytics companies. Suresh Vittal is the chief product officer of Alteryx and is responsible for the company's strategic vision. He leads the product management, engineering, and development organizations, playing a critical role in the company's cloud data science and analytics product strategy. He's helping Alteryx make machine learning and AI accessible to non-developers. With over 20 years of experience at companies of various sizes and stages, Suresh has led teams focused on platform and product strategy, product marketing, pricing, packaging, and go-to-market strategy. Most recently, Suresh was responsible for overseeing product management, product marketing, and go-to-market strategy for Adobe's digital experience business, including Adobe's Experience Cloud. Suresh joined Adobe in 2013 through the company's acquisition of Neolane, where he served as chief product officer. Before that, he was an analyst at Forrester in the customer intelligence practice. Suresh holds a master's degree in business administration from Greenwich College, as well as a master's degree of science in computer information systems from Bentley College. And without further ado, Suresh, it's my pleasure to welcome you to AI and the Future of Work. Let's get started by having you share a bit more about your background and how you got into this space.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you, and I'm looking forward to the conversation. You know, it's funny, I found my way into this space through one of the early pioneers in analytics, a company called SPSS. SPSS used to make statistical software, and probably what you would think of as the first generation of AI. When it was not fashionable, it used to be called data mining. And I cut my teeth there, you know, worked on a variety of world-class products there, worked with clients to help them build analytics projects and do data mining. And one of the early days of bringing web data and combining that with offline data was some of the early work that we did in that space. So I found my feet there, worked a lot in the analytics category, particularly in ways to bring web analytics much closer to what used to be called at that time offline analytics. At this point, it's all online, so the distinction is futile. From there, I went to Forrester Research. I founded the customer intelligence practice. You know, one of the best things about AI and analytics is, as the world gets more digital, and there's a digital footprint everywhere, the amount of data, the velocity at which it approaches you, and the granularity really creates this massive groundwork for analytics, particularly in the customer space. This was our first hypothesis when we started the practice at Forrester. Customer intelligence became the fastest growing topic at Forrester Research. I built the customer intelligence in the marketing technology practice. So spent the last 20 or so years in the customer intelligence analytics, MarTech space. And, you know, increasingly you find these categories are super intertwined. And with the emergence of generative AI, you can see every part of the customer value chain is going to get deeply impacted and transformed in some ways in disruptive fashion, in other ways in kind of incremental fashion. But the change is here and about to happen.
I mentioned in your intro that you had a good run at Adobe, certainly one of the most iconic enterprise software companies, really most iconic software companies in general. Would love to know what you learned from Adobe in terms of the leadership style, the culture that maybe you've brought into Alteryx.
Yeah, you know, Adobe is such an iconic brand, as you said, and probably the best known story of doing the transformation from packaged sell through channels to sell directly to consumer and sell in a SaaS cloud fashion. I was fortunate to be part of that amazing company for 8 years. Some of the best lessons I learned were, you know, it really starts with product. So investing the time in the product strategy, in the customer's experience with the product, is really going to be critical for any company in this space. You know, and Shantanu, our CEO at that time, and still is, used to really talk about the blurring of the lines between information, product experience, and the continued kind of customer journey with many of your products. And as we know, that line has completely blurred. And so as you think about how do you bring a customer onto your product and how do you have them experience the best about your product and how do you make their onboarding experience to be joyful and keep them in your product was really one of the seminal lessons that I learned at Adobe. Shantanu was also pretty famous for saying, you know, you have to plant the flag and build the road. And the company goes through both of these activities simultaneously in some cases. But you have to be really sincere about the flag planting. And I think that really alludes to the amount of time you need to spend on the strategy, understanding the market, understanding the customer requirements, understanding the competitive pressure, and then help the teams build the road. And I'm very passionate about that journey that every product has to go through and every team has to go through. So building a culture of trust, building a culture where you're offering the same degree of context to everybody involved, and then giving them the opportunity and the ability to build great things, where the fear of failure is really an opportunity to learn, not an opportunity to blame. Is were really great lessons I learned at Adobe, and I've strived to bring that forward here at Alteryx.
For listeners who aren't familiar with the Alteryx journey, describe a little bit about the mission and the vision of Alteryx, and maybe specifically about that culture of innovation that you've brought to the company.
Yeah, thank you. So Alteryx is this amazing, beloved product that puts the power of analytics in the hands of the end user. And you know, many companies claim they do this, but then you end up seeing lots of software that ends up being shelfware. We are so proud at Alteryx that our product gets used multiple hours a day for the most important jobs in an analyst's life, every single day, every week, every month, every year. And Alteryx has this amazing history at this point, you know, millions of business analysts using the product to do complex analytical work that would have required them to know SQL or Python or be able to write complex code or build rigorous models. They're able to do this without knowing a single line of code, without having to write a lick of code, and be able to drag and drop their way to glory. So many of our users, when they talk about Alteryx, they describe it as the product that gives them superpowers, right? And I think that's a wonderful way to think about what Alteryx does for the user. Our vision is analytics for all. And truly, we've strived from day one to make, to take every technical barrier out of the analytics process. So our users can walk off the street and be amazing purveyors of analytics. And so we've largely stuck to that as we made the transition to go from a single product company to a multi-product company, to really becoming a platform where analysts, business users, data scientists, data engineers can all collaborate. You know, if you think about it, analytics is really an ultimate team sport. You're relying on data pipelines built in many different places. You're relying on data lineage and catalogs. You're relying on ETL tools. You're relying on advanced analytical models. You want to do things like predictive and generative intelligence on top of the all of this data. So one person cannot cover the entire value chain that's involved. And so it's the ultimate team sport, but collaboration in analytics is really hard. It tends to happen on email or, you know, around the virtual cooler, or somebody marks up a report, scans it and sends it back, and people have a discussion around it. So we strongly believe there's a better way to do analytics in the organization. And that's by empowering each role with the right tools to be able to do the analytics and be able to collaborate and share around that analytics project. And so we started off serving the business analysts. And then as we expanded our product set and took our products to the cloud, we found we were attracting multiple personas and multiple workloads. So we were attracting data engineers who wanted to build data pipelines into Redshift or Snowflake or Databricks. We were a great place for data scientists and citizen data scientists to work on building advanced analytical models. More than 30% of the workloads we see in our platform are around advanced analytics and around, you know, now increasing around preparing data for generative AI and for large language models to do their work. We acquired a company called Trifacta that became the base of our cloud platform. And with that, we found ourselves in the midst of this devoted community of data engineers who build, you know, complex data pipelines in SQL or Python and collaborate inside of Alteryx. So that's been our goal from day one, is really make analytics for all happen. And by going from a single product company to a multi-product company, going from serving the business analyst to serving multiple technical and non-technical personas, but we've kept that core ethos going across our product strategy, which is we want to be for the user, and for us, empowering them to do amazing things with data has been at the core of our mission and continues to be at the core of our mission.
That vision and that mission are so well aligned with the benefits of AI and LLMs, but without assuming, you know, what you're actually shipping, we'd love to know, what are the kind of AI first features that you have in the market, and then what's up ahead?
Yeah, that's great. You know, so we were dabbling in language models to help our journey with text extraction from data and to do PDF conversion and to do OCR work and computer vision work. So we've been building tools to allow this community to do advanced analytics. And then as we saw the power and impact of large language models, we were really keen on finding ways to incorporate that into our platform. And so we go about this in kind of very distinct ways. One, we want to use these generative AI capabilities to take the mundane out of everyday life. and to make it easier for the analysts to focus on the more high value add work. So we started to add capabilities inside the product that did exactly that, right? One of the things that our analyst community would ask for, our user community would ask for over and over again, is this ability to create summarization and documentation of these complex workflows that they write. So an average client of ours will probably touch about half a dozen data sources, will output to, you know, 4 to 6 places, say NetSuite, Tableau and Power BI, Excel, Workday, and so on, right? So it's very common that lots of different data sources as inputs, lots of different output environments, operational systems getting powered by the insights that these analysts create, and then workflows that have lots and lots of different tools, data preparation, blending, data quality, building a model, doing a graphical analysis, and then pushing that insight out. Now, an analyst is doing hundreds of these at any given time. An average customer has what we think of as hundreds of thousands of workflows that kind of drive pretty mission-critical analysis. Now, these companies have a problem, Dan. They don't understand all of these workflows. Somebody's built them and operationalized them, but the workflows aren't crystal clear to the company. The transformations aren't well understood. The data sources might change. The outputs might change. And so a request we used to get over and over again is, hey, wouldn't it be great if you created a body of governance, a layer of governance on top of all of these workflows? Large language models, you find, are extremely well suited to do this. And so we offered a capability called Workflow Summary. And what it does is it allows our users to just click a button, transform all of these workflows into short description summary documents that explain what happens in the workflow and the data sources and the outputs and the transformation and the results. This caught on like wildfire, right? Hundreds of customers jumped on it and started to use it immediately. We thought it would be great if we help analysts accelerate the analytics process, right? So we have a product called Auto Insights. And the power of Auto Insights is, at the heart of it is an AI engine that's constantly watching the analytics that an analyst does, or based on its understanding of an analyst's role and functional responsibilities, starts to make recommendations of metrics and measures that they should be caring about. And these analysts really grok onto those metrics very quickly because they say, hey, there's an anomaly here or there's a shift there. Let's explore that a little further. And so one of the things we kept hearing from the business users was, wouldn't it be great if you helped us write the report that explains this metric or this measure better? So we said, this is a great problem that generative AI can help you solve. And so we created a capability called Magic Documents. And pretty soon, more than half the install base for Auto Insights starts to use Magic Documents, because the journey from identifying a metric to explaining that metric to your sales leader or to your HR functional leader will require you to write a short narrative that aims at their responsibility. And so giving the analyst the ability to go from metric to storytelling, we think, is a really powerful vehicle to deploy generative AI. So these are a couple of early results. We've got another capability called Playbooks, which, based on your functional role, your responsibilities, immediately identifies half a dozen use cases that you should be paying attention to. And then you say, that's a use case. How do I go to the next step of starting to build an operational system around it? We do that for you, right? We use generative AI to actually build a workflow for you. We even populate that workflow with artificial data, with synthetic data. So you can start to see some results. And if that workflow makes sense and you're able to explain it to the rest of your organization, you can swap out the synthetic data with your real company data and actually start to build analytical models. So one part of our journey was, how can we take some of the mundane out of their lives? Other part of the journey was, how do we accelerate how they go from insights to storytelling. Another part of the journey was so many analysts have a cold start problem. It's hard for them to get started on analytics. And how do you help them rapidly accelerate through that analytics journey? Generative AI has been, and AI generally has been, an amazing capability to use to make these things happen. When we think about these capabilities, we're really focused on helping our users achieve great outcomes. And so we're doing a lot around masking the rigor around large language modeling or around the vector database, but allowing them to focus on the analytical workload.
I believe that the AI theme for 2024 is going to be embedding AI into existing workflows. And there'll be a shift away from this hyperventilating around the foundation models and the underlying technologies, vector databases, et cetera. I believe we're rapidly approaching, at least in Silicon Valley, where we like to talk about this stuff incessantly, fatigue when it comes to the latest foundation model. Everything you described is consistent with that, you know, this shift toward specific use cases embedded in existing workflows. How do you think about that shift from a focus on kind of Gen AI parlor tricks to where you get business value out of Gen AI?
Yeah, I love how you describe it. Gen AI parlor tricks is actually a very apt description of what's happening. And once you get past the early hype of, hey, it's going to disrupt everything and change everything, then you start to say, okay, what is it really going to change? And how is it going to change? And how is it going to create value for these different personas? So obviously, an end user wants to use it, but doesn't want to be in the business of training the model and worrying about hallucination or flat out lies. They want to be in the business of creating the analytical outcome. A CIO, on the other hand, you know, they are taking a more expansive perspective. And they're saying, look, at any given time, we may have 3 or 4 LLMs that we are training and customizing for our use case. We're training on our data. We want to control the output. We want to govern the output. We want to make sure the output, the insights don't help our competitors. You know, these are all super reasonable goals, I think. But they require you to think about this as get past the hype and start thinking about this as how do you responsibly deploy this in the context of their existing infrastructure, in the context of the cost equation that they have to solve for, and the context of the governance that they seek to impose. So I won't name this company. I'm speaking with the CIO of, let's say, a large financial institution. Right? And he said, look, Suresh, unsupervised learning is not going to happen with any great pace in my organization. But I'd really want to pilot a few of these models, large or small. Again, you know, there's clear distinction to be had there. And there are use cases where you can direct one or the other. But he said, look, we do want to pilot this, but we want to do this in a responsible way. And we want to do this in a way where we control the analytical outcomes that show up. And so can you give us access to some of the training data and the environments in which you're training, but put it in our world, put it in our infrastructure? So we can bring our data and we can train this model so we can retain those insights ourselves. I said, that's a perfectly reasonable request. Let's help you do that. So our customer very quickly said, hey, we've got this HR analytics problem. It's hard for us to understand the skill sets of the people we are hiring and what we need to do to transform the workforce. So we gave them, so they're an existing customer that uses Kentrix Designer and Analytics Automation. And so we introduced them to our AI studio. And we said, look, this is how we train the large language models that we use. You're happy to pick up from where we left off and bring your data and start to train. And very often at this point in time, Dan, so many of our customers actually need help around establishing guardrails and helping understanding what's happening in the training process? Or do I use fine-tuning or do I use RAG? You know, so they want to have that level of discussion around their data and around their use case. And as providers, we need to be ready to help them do that. The end of this may be they may not buy more software from you, right? And I think a lot of companies have to be prepared for that, that as you're going on this journey, customers are starting to think about the use case in which they would deploy it and all the governance that supports that deployment.
Suresh, we can't have this conversation without talking about the impact of these new capabilities on the traditional role of the data scientist and even the business analyst. You know, like you said, there's so many companies that celebrate this new kind of emergent persona, you know, the citizen analyst. But there are a lot of people that went to school and got degrees and are very proud of their ability to bit twiddle or data twiddle, I should say. What's your thought on the future of that traditional role of the data scientist or the traditional data wrangler?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question and a great point. And I really think there's going to be disruption in their lives and their jobs. But the disruption isn't what I think people think it is, right? The disruption isn't that these roles are going away and somehow generative AI obviates the need for a strong analyst or for a data scientist. What's probably going to happen is a regular analyst is going to lose his or her job to an analyst who can harness the power of generative AI. And similarly, a regular data scientist is going to lose the opportunity to somebody who's able to harness the power of generative AI. At the end of the day, context into the business is still going to be super important. It's increasingly going to become a multidisciplinary function. It's not going to be enough for a data scientist or a citizen data scientist to claim that they don't have context of the business and they just play with the data, they just work with the data, right? Or work with the model. So I think the role is that these data scientists and these citizen data scientists are going to evolve, I believe, into multidisciplinary experts. Generative AI or analytics automation or predictive AI, predictive analytics, are going to be but one of the many tools in their bag. The skill sets that they'll have to bring is, how do we streamline the research process? How do we explain the model? How do we refine the transparency? How do we offer the human oversight? How do we put a stamp of trust and accountability? How do we reduce bias and noise? These are things that you'll still need a human and the creativity of the human to help on this journey. So I think this, the roles in some ways are going to become more important, but it's also going to be more demanding, right? If a generative AI model can do a lot of the work that a data scientist may end up having to do, then what's the value add that the data scientist adds to the process? And I truly believe the value add is some of those things I was describing, but this ability for them to become multidisciplinary experts around trust, around governance, around explainability, around bias, around introducing new data into the model, around responsibly rolling these analytical apps inside the organization. I think that's going to be the new reskilling of the data scientist and the analyst community.
We've had a lot of versions of this conversation on this podcast, and one of the recurring themes seems to be that the skill of asking good questions is going to become more important than the skill of, let's say, manipulating SQL queries. I assume based on your previous answer, you agree with that. What I'd love to know is, if let's say you're talking to the next generation of students, leaders, citizen analysts, perhaps, what are the skills that they should be learning today that are future-proof in a world where an environment like Alteryx plus Gen AI is predominant?
Yeah. You know, I'm lucky enough that I'm father of two wonderful kids. I've got an 18-year-old who's going to embark on the college journey next year, right? And this is a conversation I have with him, Dan, all the time. And, you know, I'm one of those parents where I'm encouraging him to play with ChatGPT and the various other models with Claude and Runway and all of the other opportunities that he has in front of him. Because I think the biggest skill they can learn is to understand how these things work. The second big skill that they can understand, they can acquire is you described the skill of asking questions. In the world of large language models, it's the prompt engineering, right? And how skillful can you get at having that interface with the model itself and guide it? So it's almost guided analytics and guided learning that accelerates the discovery and the learning process. And I think that's going to become a skill in great demand, the ability to stitch together the understanding of the models with the ability to write great prompts, with the ability to understand at what point in the journey do I use which one of these models, right? In some cases, the cost of a wrong answer is low. You don't want to invest a lot of money in that domain. In other cases, let's say drug discovery, the cost of a wrong answer is extraordinary high. It could result in a company going upside down. And so you may want to invest more in that domain. And so this whole power of ensemble modeling and being able to understand what do we use to solve which problem and what's the forgiveness level for a wrong answer, you know, I think some of the old strategy themes, Dan, apply very well here as well, right? If you think about in strategy and in product management, there's always this question that every product manager has to answer, which is a decision I'm about to make, is that a reversible decision or is that an irreversible decision? If it's a reversible decision, it's like a two-way door, right? You walk in and then you change your mind and you walk back out again, right? It's a turnstile almost. An irreversible decision, once you walk in, there's no going back, right? And so when you're building great products, and by the way, a lot of what the outcome of these large language models and generative AI is going to happen is we're going to end up with a lot of applications that are infused with generative AI. So the app building world is also going to change, right? And so I think a lot of these future analysts have to be able to learn the lessons of, are these decisions reversible? Are they irreversible? And what's the cost of reversing a decision? And therefore apply the right techniques based on those that understanding. So in some ways, I think you are going to get much more steeped in the context, in rational thought, in creativity, in being able to do great prompt engineering, and being able to understand these things better, rather than, and I think the world of large language models is largely going to get commoditized, right? You're going to have many of, you know, maybe 7 to 10 of them that all work within a percentage of error of one another, or they're about to catch up. And the rational thought, thinking, and logical, critical thinking skills are going to become even more important.
Suresh, I asked that question purely out of self-interest. My girls are 13 and 16, so a little bit behind your kids, but I'm going to require them to listen to that answer. And we're going to have a discussion about, you know, their ambitions and their, you know, the skills that they're learning today. Unbelievably, we're almost out of time. But I'm not letting you off the hot seat without answering one last question for me. So polish the crystal ball. Let's say we're back having a version of this conversation in 3 to 5 years, and Gen AI is ubiquitous and access to data is commonplace. Let's say it's much more accessible than it is today. What's one behavior that becomes commonplace in that environment at work that today might just seem like science fiction?
Oh, wow. Dan, that has me stumped, right? I would say,
Forrester analyst, we're not allowed to stump you. You're unstumpable.
I would say, you know, I don't think it'd be science fiction, but where a lot of this is headed towards is literally every function is going to change to a degree. How you do insights, how you summarize, how you write code, how you run processes, how you research. The one thing that's pretty obvious that's going to happen is scenario planning and creating many versions of outcomes is going to become easier and easier inside the enterprise. You don't have to rely on guessing or gut instinct anymore, right? You can literally run the scenarios and understand the outcomes. So I would say one of the big revelations for this next phase is going to be the ability to run multitudes of scenarios, again, steeped in business context, and be able to visualize outcomes very quickly, pick the outcome, apply your creativity, your critical thinking, your emotions, your intuition to then evolve those scenarios is going to become commonplace, I believe. Today, if you have to do a Monte Carlo simulation, or if you have to run a scenario, it's expensive. And it's the domain of a few. And those people are always in high demand. And that's why you go through cycles like annual operating plans and things like that, right? You're building, after all, that's what you're doing. You're building that scenario. I think in a world with AI, I won't even say generative AI, but in the world of AI and machine learning, scenario planning and looking at a range of outcomes is going to become much easier, which means we'll be able to play those scenarios out, apply thinking, critical thinking skills, and ask the right questions of the scenarios, and sift through number of answers before you settle on the right one.
We've come a long way since your days at SPSS.
That's a bold vision
for the future, but that is very credible based on the things that you and I see every day.
That's right.
Well, gosh, Suresh, we're out of time, but this has been a lot of fun. And before we wrap up, let the audience know where they can learn more about the work that you and your team are doing so that we can all continue the conversation offline.
Yeah. So you can obviously, Dan, thank you for the time. I enjoyed the conversation and I hope your listeners will as well. I'd say follow Alteryx along in the various social channels, but also at alteryx.com, and we've got lots of exciting stuff. I shared a few of those, but there's lots more coming here in the new year.
Well, all the best to you and the team, and congrats on the success.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the time.
Excellent. That's all the time we have for this week on AI and the Future of Work. I'm your host, Dan Turchin from PeopleRain. And of course, we're back next week with another fascinating guest.